In the little town where I live, in Hampshire County, Massachusetts, we now have a public safety complex around the corner from what used to be our hokey Andy Griffith-esque fire station. In the cascade of post-9/11 Homeland Security money in the first term of the George W. Bush administration, our town's share of the loot bought us a new fire truck, one that turned out to be a few feet longer than the garage where our town kept our old fire truck. So then we got some more homeland money to build something big enough to house the new truck. In homage to the origin of the funding, the local auto detailer airbrushed on the side of the new truck a patriotic tableau of a billowing flag-like banner, a really big bald eagle, and the burning World Trade Center towers. The American taxpayers' investment in my town's security didn't stop at the new safety complex. I can see further fruit of those homeland dollars just beyond my neighbor's back fence. While most of us in town depend on well water, there are a few houses that for the past decade or so have been hooked up to a municipal water supply. And when I say a few, I mean a few. I think there are 7 houses on municipal water. Around the time we got our awesome giant new fire truck, we also got a serious security upgrade to that town water system. Its tiny pump house is about the size of 2 phone booths and accessible by a dirt driveway behind my neighbor's back lot. Or at least it used to be. The entire half-acre parcel of land around that pump house is now ringed by an 8-foot-tall chain-link fence, topped with barbed wire and fronted with a motion-sensitive, electronically controlled motorized gate. On our side of town, we call it Little Guantanamo. Mostly it's funny, but there is some neighborly consternation over how frowsy Little Guantanamo gets every summer. Even though it's town-owned land, access to Little Guantanamo is apparently above the security clearance of the guy paid to mow and brush hog. Right up to the fence, it's my neighbor's land, and they keep everything trim and tidy. But inside that fence, the grass gets eye-high. It's going feral in there. It's not just the small potatoes post-9/11 homeland spending that feels a little off-mission. It's the big-ticket stuff, too. Nobody ever made an argument to the American people, for instance, that the thing we ought to do in Afghanistan, the way we ought to stick it to Osama bin Laden, the way to dispense American tax dollars to maximize American aims in that faraway country, would be to build a brand new neighborhood in that country's capital city full of Rococo, narco-chic McMansions and apartment-slash-office buildings with giant sculptures of eagles on their roofs and stoned guards lounging on the sidewalks wearing bandoliers and plastic boots. No one ever made the case that this is what America ought to build in response to 9/11. But that is what we built. An average outlay of almost $5 billion a month over 10 years and counting has created a twisted war economy in Kabul. Afghanistan is still one of the 4 poorest countries on Earth, but now it's one of the 4 poorest countries on Earth with a neighborhood in its capital city that looks like New Jersey in the 1930s and 40s, when Newark mobsters built garish mansions and dotted the grounds with lawn jockeys and hand-painted neo-classic marble statues. Walking around this zircon-studded neighborhood of Wazir Akbar Khan, named for the general who commanded the Afghan army's rout of the British in 1842, one of the weirdest things is that the roads and the sewage and trash situation are palpably worse here than in many other Kabul neighborhoods. Even torqued-up steel-frame SUVs have a hard time making it down some of these desolate streets. Evasive driving techniques in Wazir Akbar Khan often have more to do with potholes than pot shots. One of the bigger crossroads in the neighborhood is an ad hoc dump. Street kids are there all day, picking through the newest leavings for food and for stuff to salvage or sell. There's nothing all that remarkable about a rich-looking neighborhood in a poor country. What's remarkable here is that there aren't rich Afghan people in this rich Afghan neighborhood. Whether or not the owners of these giant houses would stand for these undrivable streets, the piles of garbage, the sewage running down the sidewalk right outside their security walls, they're not here to see it. They've moved to Dubai, or to the United States, or somewhere else that's safer for themselves and their money, or our money. Most of these fancy properties in Wazir Akbar Khan were built by the Afghan elite with profits from the international influx of cash that accompanied the mostly American influx of war a decade ago, built to display status or to reap still more war dollars from the Western aid agencies and journalists and politicians and diplocrats and private contractors who need proper places to stay in the capital. The surges, big and small, have been good to the property barons of Wazir Akbar Khan. Residential real estate values were reportedly up 75% in 2008 alone. Check the listings under Kabul Villas today, and you'll find properties priced from $7,000 to $25,000 a month, with specs like this: 4 floors, a dozen rooms, 9 toilets, 3 big kitchens, sleeps 20. No one sold the American people on this incarnation of Wazir Akbar Khan as one of the desired outcomes of all those hundreds of billions of tax dollars spent in Afghanistan. But it is what we have built at Ground Zero, Afghanistan. Whatever we were aiming at, this is the manifest result.